Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is Nicole Hannah-Jones, creator of the 1619 Project from the New York Times Magazine. The project makes a case that you don't often hear in history textbooks, that slavery was foundational to America. So it wasn't surprising that we ignited a fierce debate among historians about these issues. But that's the power of the New York Times, to spark an important dialogue with bold, rigorous reporting that forces us to examine our assumptions. To learn more, go to nytimes.com/worthit.
Hi, I'm Imri, the host of the Wannabe Podcast, the podcast that takes you from where you are now to where you want to be in 30 minutes or less. Thank you so much for tuning into last week's episode. It seems that we have all been caught in the comparison trap, and it was so lovely to connect with you and hear your stories about how you personally come out of that horrible, horrible, icky place. So thank you for tuning in and leaving comments and tweeting me about it. This week, I am super pumped to bring you this episode with Ijoma Oluo. She is an incredible writer and someone I really do admire. Ijoma is based in Seattle, and she's the author of the New York Times bestseller, So You Want to Talk About Race, which is published by Seal Press. She was named one of The Root's top 100 most influential African Americans in 2017, and she's one of the most influential people in Seattle by Seattle Magazine, and one of the 50 most influential women in Seattle by Seattle Met. Ijoma is the winner of the 2018 Feminist Humanist Award by the American Humanist Society. If you're not familiar with her work, she focuses on race and identity, feminism, social and mental health, social justice, and the arts. Her writing has been featured in The Washington Post, NBC News, Elle Magazine, Time, The Stranger, and The Guardian. And in today's episode, we cover life with ADD and the difficulties with focusing that she has and also keeping track of like her money and everything else. We talk about her greatest achievement today, and I think you'll find it beautiful and refreshing. And we discuss how you can have thoughtful and productive conversations about race. I can't wait for you to hear this. I wanted to know if there's been a significant moment or an event in your career, particularly in writing, that you felt like, oh my God, I've made it. Has that happened for you yet?
I don't think that has happened, just because I think writing is so vast. So I'm still, you know, really very much in this place where I want to just try so many different things, you know. So there's no achievement necessarily that I'm looking to have. Mm-hmm. It's more, I feel almost like I'm still in college. You know what I mean? Like taking all these self-directed classes. And I don't know, it'll probably be a couple decades before I'm out of that stage, if ever, because that's just always what I've loved about everything. I'm a perpetual student. I think probably the most satisfying part of my career so far, where I know that even if I died tomorrow, I would be incredibly happy and feel like it would have been worth a lot, was I think just in writing the dedication in my book, I got to write, you know, a dedication to a lot of people that I love dearly, and including my sons. And I had, my youngest son was having a really bad day a couple weeks ago and just, you know, not feeling great about himself. He's an anxious child and a perfectionist. And he, you know, it's one of those high achievers that if it's not really great the first time, he thinks it's complete trash.
Oh, and I my don't sister's know, like that.
Yeah. And he was feeling sick too. He had a cold. And so, you know, he didn't have any reserves. And he wasn't feeling too great about himself. And he came in my room and said, Mom, I don't really like myself today. And we talked about it, and he just wasn't hearing me, you know, as I was trying to explain to him all the great things that he does and how much joy he brings people. And he just didn't want to hear it. Mm. And I finally, and then I, you know, kind of had this idea, and I said, hey, go get one of my books, because I just got in a box to sign, to send off to some people. And so he went and got it, and I said, no, I want you to read the dedication. And, you know, he got to read what I wrote about him. And I said, no matter what happens, even after I'm long gone, even after you're long gone, anyone who picks up this book in any version is going to read what you meant to me and what you meant to my career, and they're always going to know. And like, for me, I think that was probably the most rewarding moment I've had of my whole career, knowing that I, at least I got that down,
oh, you know, like, nice.
Like forever, you know. And he started crying, just, you know, it was like this kind of relief where I think he could read it and absorb it, especially the way his little brain works, a lot easier than he could hear it, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just, that for me was like the most amazing, wonderful gift that I had never expected that this career could give me, was the chance to put down, you know, for all eternity, for, you know, however long the written word exists.
Yeah.
How great my children are. So I know it has very little to do with what I write about, but in many ways it has a lot to do, because I think, you know, my concern for the world as a parent drives a lot of my work. So far that's been my winning moment. Like, and it's going to take a lot before something kind of
trumps
eclipses that.
Yeah. That is like the most beautiful moment I think I've ever had in my life. I'm not really one for sentimental, but that was so touching. I'm like the biggest grin was on my face as you were speaking. And it was, I mean, what more can you want out of this world beyond, you know, giving back to the people that you love and knowing that that is going to exist for eternity? I think that's the beauty of books, is that they are always present and there and able for people to consume. And I mean, that's beautiful. So thank you for sharing that. That's lovely. I feel like very remiss in switching to where we're going now, but I did want to know about a challenge that you might be currently facing or have faced in your career that you've either made you want to like really quit, or, you know, that you just found very, very difficult. And could you talk about a difficult moment that just pushed you to the edge?
You know, I would say for the most part, when you're writing about race, but you've existed as a Black woman your whole life, the difficulty really isn't in the job, you know? Either I face it in my day-to-day life as microaggressions in the office, or I face it with, you know, readers telling me they hope I die on Twitter.
Wow.
It's six of one, half a dozen of the other, you know? I'm pretty immune to a lot of that. I would say, honestly, the biggest challenge for me has been, I have really bad ADD, and so do my kids. And I now have a self-directed career, and I have to try and keep track of billing and taxes and
oh, wow.
due dates and emails. And I had to write a whole book, and that actually was what pushed me to finally get my formal diagnosis. I
oh,
know
wow.
this was something I had for a long time, and my son had been diagnosed, but I had always put it off because, you know, when you have ADD, you put things off. And so I had always put it off. And then I realized as my due date for the book was approaching, and I had all these scattered thoughts as I was trying to find some way to work through it, that I was not going to write it if I
wow.
didn't get some help. It was not going to be done. And so I think that learning how to work with my brain, because while I have ADD and it makes a lot of these things incredibly difficult, it's also the thing that helps me, you know, that helped me hyper-focus and helps my creativity, and allows my brain to kind of jump and make connections, you know, in a way that I need to. And in many ways actually makes me really good at, you know, public speaking, but also it means that, you know, I'm absolute crap for due dates. And if you ever, you know, people know now, most of the people who've worked with me for a while know they have to email me and then text me and then maybe call me and then email me again. And then maybe I'll get back to them, you know? And that's been tough because usually you work in a company, mm-hmm. someone handles your payroll, you have a boss who's there staring at you, telling you to get things done.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the paperwork and the administrative stuff is usually done by someone else. and I'm kind of responsible for all of it. And you know, and there's only so much like you can handle when you have ADD, even no matter how good you get at things, you know. So of course, the week my book came out, I was late on my mortgage. You know, I had the money, but you know, there was only so many things I could keep track of.
Yeah. I hate you.
And that was when I couldn't, until they started calling me, and then it was like $300 late charge. And you know, you're like, oh man, but you know, like I've had to learn how to try to deal with it, mitigate it, but also embrace it where it helps me, and kind of then let some things go.
Yeah.
I can't do all of this work and then also master ADD at the same time. So that's been a really big challenge for me, is there are certain things legally, you know, I can't just not pay my taxes because I'm not good with paperwork. I can try, but you know, that's only going to work for so long. And so that for me has been really tough, is there are whole aspects, a real creative job like writing. Usually there's a lot of people where if you're really good at writing, chances are you have the personality that's not good at everything else that goes with writing.
Mm-hmm.
You're good at the writing and that's it. And so that's been tough. I wouldn't want to switch it. I wouldn't want to be good at the paperwork and bad at writing, or just mediocre at both. But I don't necessarily, you know, it doesn't mean that that's going to make my bills pay themselves,
yeah,
or, you know, get me to any appointment on time or any interview on time. And so that's really been tough, because I'm the freedom I need to write also removes all of the structure I need to like get paid for writing and, you know, all those other things that you need to survive. So that's been a real struggle over the last couple of years, trying to work my way around it. I'm not much better at it at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure if I were to add up all of the people I haven't invoiced, it would be probably tens of thousands of dollars.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Because I the thought of spending 90 seconds to type out an invoice and send it seems unbearable to me. And now, of course, I would have to go and find them and search for my emails, and, you know, because I don't keep track. And,
yeah.
I hope nobody listens to this and then calls me and knows that I'm never going to bill them. Because
I can so relate to this so much. I have had to send an invoice like last month for some freelance work I'm doing. I'm so bad at paperwork. Like, just so bad. Just like as you're describing, probably, I don't think I do have like ADD though. I'm just bad. And like the people email me back, like, you forgot like a whole day that you worked for us. So here's, we've updated your invoice to include that money we owe you. And I was like, thank you so much, because I forgot. And I never keep track. I'm too focused on the actual job at hand, the task at hand. So yeah.
This is Nicole Hannah-Jones, creator of the 1619 Project from the New York Times Magazine. The project makes a case that you don't often hear in history textbooks, that slavery was foundational to America. So it wasn't surprising that we ignited a fierce debate among historians about these issues. But that's the power of the New York Times, to spark an important dialogue with bold, rigorous reporting that forces us to examine our assumptions. To learn more, go to nytimes.com/worthit.
Paperwork is not fun though, but I mean, you still put beautiful work out into the world, but yeah, definitely like go through these, get some, like, you need to hire someone and get them to like be your personal bailiff for sure. Like, you cannot be leaving money on the table.
I know. Well, you know what's funny is I do have an intern, and poor thing, she's, you know, I think it's tough because she still needs me to get back to her.
Yeah.
And I'm just as bad at getting back to her as I am at getting back to anyone else. So she tries to do what she can. But, you know, she has this list that's dozens of lines long of things that she needs me to say yes or no on. And I'm like, oh, later, you know. I had an intern last year. It was funny because she kind of figured out, like, she would look at my schedule and be like, okay, you're driving to an event, it's going to be an hour, I'm calling you, and while you're driving and you can't do anything else, you're going to give me answers to all these questions.
Oh, that's good.
Like, you know, but I think that takes a lot of, you know, comfort, and like, you know, she had kind of figured out that I wasn't going to get mad. And this other intern, you know, she's very kind, and it's taking her some time to figure out how to navigate the fact that I needed an intern because I'm bad at getting back at people, but I'm not actually going to get better at getting back to her either. And so I don't make it easy for her. She at least makes sure that I get to events.
Oh, that's good.
Which is nice.
That's good. Yeah, I definitely relate to the keeping track of organization. And it is, I think it's a surprisingly common thing that people just not like, if you're especially as a creative, it's like it's also the last thing you want to do. Like, no one wants to do all of the like admin, like personal life admin anyway, so like add that to anything else is just, yeah, it's not a good recipe for success, especially where money's involved and like time. Yeah, time management is just tough to get hold of. I wanted to talk about your book, because that's really why you're here. And I love it. Like I said, I'm about three quarters, maybe two thirds of the way through, I would say. And what I really loved about your story is that you came from this political science background, but like writing has always been a part of who you are. And it's been something that you really loved doing.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you were younger, and I feel like political science was 100% like the right thing to do despite going through all of those years in tech, because you write in a way that makes like very clear, and like there were some really complex concepts that I think I knew in my head but I was never able to articulate. I don't know if that's been the general feedback that you've been getting so far, but it's, you've just literally just taken things, complex things from my head, and just like put it on paper and like explain like why this is the way it is and this is how it works now. And especially things around privilege. And like, I had to do a personal checklist of my privilege today at work with my friend. She's like, what privilege do you have? And I was like, well, let me start with this massive list. And I think even because the story, because the book is peppered with your own personal experiences as well, and I guess I could relate to a lot of it, it's really helped me better have conversations about race, which I guess is really the purpose of this book, right? So yeah. I want to thank you for writing it, because it has been essential reading. I have honestly recommended it to everyone I've encountered. I've done like three interviews this week and I'm like, so you need to read this book. And they've all like taken a picture of the sleeve, and it is a fantastic way to start the conversation and actually like find the words that I don't think a lot of people have. And I know that you've mentioned in past interviews that, you know, this is not the book, this is not what you wanted to write, but was a book something that you wanted to do?
I hadn't even thought about it, honestly, at all. I think that I was writing, and it was mostly out of need, right? It was, things would happen and I felt like I needed to say something, and people were indicating they needed to hear it. Mm-hmm. And so when my agent approached me, I had never considered it at all.
Oh, wow.
And also, you know, with my ADD and knowing how my brain worked, writing something really long, I mean, it honestly just, it wasn't, oh, I, you know, would have said no, or I was thinking I would hate that. It just had never crossed my mind as an option at all. I wasn't even thinking about it. So when my agent, prospective agent, you know, yeah, she came to me and said that she had been reading my work for a while and asked, you know, have you ever considered writing a book? I honestly said no, because I hadn't. And, you know, I was very skeptical at first and it didn't sound fun. I didn't know how my brain worked. I knew I was starting to figure out why essays worked as well for me as they did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the quick turnaround. If you have ADD, you know, you can be very focused mm-hmm. on something that interests you for a short period of time. And so writing online on current political issues is really well suited to that. You know, I can turn out, it's rare that an essay takes me longer than an hour to write.
Oh, wow.
And it's partially because with my ADD, I'm constantly searching for new information of what's happening all of the time. But then while it's hot, I have to write it then. If you call me and say, will you write an essay for me? It'll be due in 3 weeks. You're never going to get that essay from me.
It's never happened.
But if you, a lot of times, some editors who have learned from watching me, they'll watch my Twitter feed and email right away and say, hey, we noticed you're talking about this. Can you write an essay now? And they know I'll turn that essay in within the hour. But if they say, hey, come up with some ideas and pitch me, never going to happen. It's just never happening. So, yeah, I didn't have any, you know, I have stories in my head. I always have. Mm-hmm. You know, I think as the brain of a writer, I have stories in my head that I always knew were very long stories. But the thought of actually writing them, the thought that I would ever write a book was beyond me.
That is so interesting because I always thought most writers' like goals would be to write a book in life. So it's quite interesting that that was not like something that had even crossed your mind. I mean, if it did cross your mind, would this have been the book you would have written had you not been asked?
No. And it was not at all what came to mind when she said, have you considered it? And I said, no. And then she was like, well, I think you should. And then like, she was like, what about, you know, writing about talking about race? And I was like, nah, no.
No, thanks.
It doesn't sound fun. I'm incredibly grateful she did. You know, now that it's over, I'm proud of the book. And I do think it fills a niche, you know, and I think I was able to find a space. I'm obsessed with contributing something of use mm-hmm. in my writing all of the time, no matter what form. And so there's a lot that has been said about race, and there's a lot that could be said about race. But it was really important to me to not waste people's time. Mm-hmm. And I don't think this book wastes people's time.
Not at all.
I think it's a different contribution from a lot of other books out there. And so I'm glad that she brought it up. And I'm glad I was able to find this angle for it and find this thing to put out there, because if she hadn't brought it up, I probably never would have written it. And I do actually think it's important, and I think it's a good book, and I hope it's something that other people build upon, you know, and maybe it starts a lot more writing of these practical aspects of looking at race and, you know, in day-to-day life and also broadly, you know, more systemically as well. Would love to see a lot more guidebooks and workbooks and also a lot of AD study and things like this dedicated to issues around race, because I feel like it has been, you know, when people say that they studied race, you know, anything having to do with race in college, a lot of times people dismiss that. They think it's not a valid mm-hmm. work. They think it's not valid science. But it's one of the most important issues in society, especially in Western society. And I would love to see more people looking at writing toward practical solution, writing toward, you know, institutional solution, mm-hmm. And giving things that people can actually take into the world and work with. So I'm very, very glad that she had that idea, because I don't know, you know, what I would be doing today, but I'm grateful personally for it.
Yeah, I'm very grateful that you wrote this book, to be honest. I thought it was going to be quite similar to Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race. I feel like that was just because of the title situation, but they're very, very different books. And I actually love books that have practical elements. Like, I actually get very bored very quickly when it's just like, I have struggled with fiction, for example. And I struggle to read things that I just feel like, okay, this is educational, but I don't know how I then go on to apply this. So I read a lot of like entrepreneur and business books, and it's like, oh, this is very nice. I feel very motivated and very inspired. But like, what do I do now? And I find that I have that with a lot of books. They're not bad authors. They're not bad books. It's just, how do I move forward? And I feel like I've actually progressed. Like I've had the book for all of about 4 days, and I've had about 4 or 5 conversations about race, about privilege in that time. And I think what you said in the very beginning is, you know, this is going to make you feel very uncomfortable. And I was like, surely not. I'm a black woman in this. I'm going to be fine. Like I was very uncomfortable, especially when I had to like really address like where my politics lie and why, like, especially like when you gave the anecdote about the young black men while you were at the like uppity black folk picnic. I don't know if that's how you described it, but that's kind of how I read it. And you had this picnic and these black guys come up and, you know, it was kind of like, oh, we weren't considering you guys. And I really, like, that really resonated with me. And I was like, oh, okay, I really have to look at where I sit in the whole landscape and what I say on the outside and how that really trickles down and who that's really affecting. And instead of kind of just giving myself applause for just like creating space, but I'm creating space for people essentially just like me who have, you know, inherently got quite a bit of privilege, whether we choose to acknowledge it or not. So I really am so grateful for this book. I think it's so important. I'm definitely doing the work to get it out there. So, I mean, you don't have to pay me any royalties or anything. It's fine. But something I did notice about it that I really wanted to just touch on before I wrap up is, you know, because you mentioned that you had ADD, which I didn't know before this actually, is that each of the chapters kind of sit as standalone essays. I'm not sure if that was deliberate or not, but I realized that as I'm reading it, I could, like, if you were to skip a chapter, not that anyone should, but you could basically skip and jump ahead and jump around and still get like the kind of full weight of each section. Was that like a deliberate format choice for you?
It was.
Oh, cool.
It was. At first, it was definitely a plan because of how I wanted it used. Mm-hmm. And it ended up actually being very fortunate with ADD because it meant I could pick up a chapter, get sick of that chapter, put it down, skip, and go to a completely different space in the book and write. And no, I wasn't, you know, going to lose flow. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, I had to make some adjustments based on the order that, you know, the book was placed in. But for me, when I wrote it, what I wanted this to be, it was the book that you kind of carried around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted you to be able to, if you were having an issue with a particular topic, pick up that chapter, read it in its completion and not feel like you had to go backwards and forwards to get that lesson. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I hoped I would see if schools wanted to use it, you know,
mm-hmm.
could teach a unit on a subject and use part of a chapter. And so that's really, you know, I really, like, throughout writing the book, practicality was my number one concern. Use was my number one concern. I think, you know, we, of course, you know, you want things to sell well, you want it to be, you know, successful. But for me, mostly, I wanted it to be really useful. And so I was trying to think, like, the way that we talk about race, I didn't want to make this book for the people who, like, it's their hobby to study everything about race and they've read everything out there.
Mm-hmm.
I really wanted it to be, wow, I'm having this issue with my cousin, or I'm having this issue with my boss, or I don't know how this one issue is affecting my community. I wanted people to be able to pick up that chapter, read it, and be able, from that, be able to move forward and take some action. And so, yeah, I really did want each chapter to stand on its own. The order is kind of important in some ways, in that if you don't have a grasp of some of the earlier chapters,
mm-hmm.
that some of the later chapters will be more difficult. You know, so there's a reason why privilege comes before intersectionality,
yeah.
right? Those are concepts that go hand in hand. But if you do have one, and, you know, if you know what privilege is, and you have a good grasp on that, but you're not still, you know, sure how intersectionality works, I wanted you to be able to pick that chapter, read it, reread it. It's something I hope people can go back again and again to whichever chapters they're having more issues with and help them. So yeah, that was very much by design. It's how I read, how I use, it's how I differentiate between the books I use
mm-hmm.
and the books I just read. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I wanted to make this really, really easy to use.
what is an action that you would recommend for listeners that either want to talk about race, or you can also choose like an action around focusing, since that was a challenge that you faced yourself. So, I mean, I'll give you a choice.
I would say the number one tip I would give anyone who wants to talk about race and wants to do it well is to sit down and figure out what your intention is for every conversation you have. These are really important conversations that are really fraught, and we enter into them because we feel like we need to, but we forget what we want to get out of the conversation. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we don't even know what we want to get out of the conversation, and you're never going to have a successful conversation about race if you don't know what it is you want to accomplish. So I would say practice, even when you sit down to read an article about race or read a book about race, say, why am I reading this? What am I hoping to get out of this? Know what your intentions are. It's going to make a huge difference in how you receive the information you get. Mm-hmm. And if you state it in conversation with other people, it's going to make a huge difference in how they converse with you, because then you're reaching an agreement about what you're hoping to get out of the conversation, a mutual agreement. And it's going to increase your chances of success and increase your chances of finding actionable items in that conversation or in your study. And so I would say definitely take it back to those roots of why am I doing this? And for an issue as important of race, mm-hmm. We can't afford to enter these things in just willy-nilly. Figure out what you want to get out of it. And know for yourself. I think a lot of times we lie to ourselves about what we want in our conversations about race when we don't examine it. And a lot of times we think that the other person wants the same thing we want, or wants the opposite of what we want. And it can stop conversations before it starts.
Isn't Ijoma just fantastic? You can get a copy of So You Want to Talk About Race on Amazon. I highly recommend it. To find out more about Ijoma, you can follow her on Twitter at Ijoma Oluo, which is IJEOMAOLUO. And you can visit her website, ijomaoluo.com, same spelling. On Wednesday, we talk about Ijoma's love of politics and how she landed in tech. Her worst advice is so good, you'll definitely want to make it to the end to hear it. This podcast is created by the Shoutout Network. To find out more about membership, visit shoutoutnetwork.co.uk. And has this podcast made you take notes, scribble down something really crazy in the spur of the moment, or even just made you think? Then let me know about it by leaving a review on iTunes via your Mac computer or the Apple Podcast app on your iPhone. Follow us at Wannabe Podcast on Twitter and Instagram to get the latest updates and just to interact and say hello. And to get extended show notes, listing the tools and resources we mentioned in this episode, visit wannabepodcast.com. All show notes will be updated on Wednesday. I can't wait to catch up with you on Wednesday. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.